Okay. We're talking about, and we're looking at a section. We started this 2 weeks ago, or I guess it's three Sundays ago now. And then we had to break because we had our 20th reunion. And then last week, Cindy dragged me kicking and screaming down to South Carolina to spoil the grandkids, so I wasn't able to be here with y'all. Okay, all right, I have to confess on that was a whopper, wasn't it? But we weren't able to be with you last week, so we're picking back up again where we left off. And we're talking about a three-level war. Okay, we're in James chapter 4. And we're talking about the presence of strife in the church. And I'm going to take a little bit more time to review the first part of this that we talked about three Sundays ago, since it's been so long, and we have a lot of folks with us this morning that weren't here on that particular Sunday. So we're going to kind of go back through that first part of it before we start focusing on each of the different levels. So let's talk about the presence of strife in the church. And one of the things that we said, that anyone who's been part of a church is likely to have seen strife within that church. And one of the reasons for that is that churches are made up of people, okay? And strife usually comes between people, okay? Doesn't usually come between cars, you know, or houses and things of that nature, inanimate objects. It comes between people. And one of the things that I tell people in marriage counseling is that, you know, whenever you put two people together, you know, for an extended period of time at all, you're going to have strife. Okay? You're going to have disagreements. You're going to have things you're going to sometimes argue about. In fact, I teach couples how to argue in healthy ways, because you are going to argue. All right? That's inevitable. Conflict, in fact, one of the definitions we talk about, conflict is inevitable in any long-term relationship. Okay? It doesn't matter whether you're talking about a church, you're talking about a job, you know, you work on your job for a little while, you first get there, we call it the honeymoon stage, same way we do with marriages, and everything's going wonderful, and then all of a sudden you realize your boss is a real jerk, right? Or your fellow employees, or somebody there that you work with, and so you got strife at work because you work with people, right? So, you know, we just have to understand, in any long-term relationship, there's the potential for strife. Now, that doesn't say that we should be going, oh, great, strife is there, so let's just enjoy it. No, we got to learn some things about it and what we do with it, and where, what we're going to focus on in this is, we're talking about strife in the church especially, where does that come from? And that's what James is going to address. A lot of people, though, use the presence of strife in a church as an excuse not to be part of church. You know, well, they argue and fight over there, you know, and so on and so forth. The church is these people just fight all the time, so I'm not going to have anything to do with church. Well, again, you know, so you're going to quit working too? You know, you're just going to leave your family? Because, again, anywhere you have people, you're going to have strife. So that's just an excuse. Strife, usually, at least in churches, and I think that's probably true in, you know, in a lot of other circumstances, you're talking about, again, businesses and things of that nature, strife usually festers from the top down. Okay? The leadership in the relationship is what creates the atmosphere. Okay? So if you're talking about at a job, if the owners of the company or whoever, the bosses, or, you know, people that just, you know, cause a lot of strife and anxiety and stress and so forth, it's going to trickle down to everybody else. You know, you got a family, mom, dad, and the kids. If mom and dad aren't getting along and there are, you know, a lot of problems they're not dealing with appropriately, then that's going to trickle down to the rest of the family. You see, it starts at the top because those at the top are the ones who are responsible for and do set the atmosphere within that group of people. Again, whether you're talking about churches or whether you're talking about businesses or homes or whatever, if the leadership is disunified, then the congregation is going to follow that. Okay? And oftentimes what happens in churches and you have leadership that is divided, then you have power struggles are usually one of the reasons that the division takes place. Somebody's struggling to be in charge and have their way and those kinds of things. People end up taking sides, and I've seen it where, you know, we've got some folks, you know, that they have this elder and this is my elder, and you know, and they, the church is divided over leadership and so forth because the leadership can't get along with one another. So that's where the responsibility for the congregation itself comes, is from the leadership in setting the tone and so forth. And as I said this last time, I think that's one of that's probably the primary reason why we don't have major problems going on in this church family. Because first of all, the eldership is committed to being united, and we get along very well. There's no power struggles in the eldership. We don't have that kind of stuff going on. And of course, that itself, I think, shows and it helps create that atmosphere I was talking about. And so, you know, we don't have people picking sides and, you know, this you know, Ray's my elder or Jerry's my elder, or, you know, we don't have any of that kind of stuff that I'm aware of. And the other part of it, though, is that the eldership, we as an eldership won't tolerate, you know, people causing strife and things of that nature in the church. You know, we got a problem, we're going to deal with it. We can deal with it head on, get it taken care of so we can move on and not let it fester and, you know, and so forth. So those are the kinds of things that need to take place in order to overcome the strife and the issues that are going to take place inevitably in any group of people. Because as we said, we're dealing with people. See? But there are healthy ways and unhealthy ways to deal with those things. And James, as he begins this section in chapter 4 and verse 1, he uses language of warfare to discuss the topic of strife in the church. Okay? So, you know, he's not talking about just, you know, we getting a little spat here and there. He's using warfare language. He says in verse 1, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you?" The Greek word for quarrels, polemai, means wars. Okay? That's what he's saying here. What causes the wars among you? Okay? And the word for fights, machai, which we said last time is where we get the word machete from. Okay? That word literally means a sword. Okay? So he's using language here. When he's talking about quarrels and fights, he's talking about war. What causes wars in the church? You see? Because again, he's saying, where? What causes these things among you? Not talking about the folks out there. Okay? He's talking about among you in the church. What causes this stuff? Among Christians. Okay? And so, as we look at this, we need to understand that strife in the church is real. Okay? It's nasty sometimes, and sometimes it can get bloody. Right? And James is going to call on us to look at why this is so. Why does this happen? Why do we allow it to happen? Okay? Now, what we're going to do is look at, and James, as he's discussing this part of it, kind of proposes this idea of war on three different levels. Okay? So we're going to look at the three different levels of war and conflict within the church. Okay? Level number one. the problem with me is you. Okay? That's level number one. The problem with me is you. When we get into conflict with others, the problem seems to be very clear to us, doesn't it? It's the other person. In fact, I tell people all the time, again in counseling, you know, what happens in relationships often is that we become experts in what's wrong with the other person. You see? And we start focusing on all of their faults, and we're really good at being able to see what's wrong with them. And that's where we get convinced the real problem is. If you would just do this, or you would stop doing this, then everything would be fine. But it's all about what's wrong with you. Because it certainly couldn't be me. Right? And so we're focusing on the other person. And in the midst of all of this, one of the things that we have to understand, though, is that there are some battles that are worth fighting, even in the church. Okay? So when we're fighting with someone else and we're convinced that they are the problem, of course, as we go to the other levels, we're going to see where the real problem is, okay? But in the midst of that, we have to keep in mind that there are some battles that need to be fought. There are reasons that battles are fought, and they're not all bad reasons. Okay? In other words, well, let me just ask you, when should we be fighting battles in the church? Okay? Yeah, that's the primary reason right there. You see? Whenever the truth of the Bible is at stake, okay, then that's, as we say oftentimes, that's a hill that's worth dying on. Okay? Because if we start compromising the truth of Scripture, just as many people do, just so that we can get along, okay, then we may as well just stop altogether. Okay? And so that is one of the keys or key reasons why, sometimes battles in the church are justified. Okay? We need to always stand for the truth. And Jesus even fought those battles, didn't he? Jesus fought those battles with the religious rulers of his day. The Apostle Paul fought those battles. And at one point in Galatians chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, let me get somebody to turn here and read there. We see Paul fighting a battle against Peter. Okay? Who's got it? Galatians 2, verses 11 and 12. Okay. Truth of Scripture issue? Better believe it. You know? Peter's, you know, he's hanging out with the Gentiles, no problem, you know. He hobnob with the Gentiles, and that's all fine until some of the Jews start coming around and all of a sudden going, oh, I can't do that anymore. What are they going to think of me? Okay? And Paul says, wrong. Says he opposed him to his face. Okay? Because what he was doing was scripturally wrong. See, and we saw earlier in our study in James, in the first part of this, and James was talking about the whole idea of showing a favoritism to some over others, right? And now James says, you know, no, don't do that. And here's another example of that. And so Paul said, that's a hill worth dying on. He opposed Peter, he says, to his face over what he was doing. Ray, go ahead. Well, and there's another lesson in here, too, that I think we need to understand. You know, who was it that introduced the Gentiles to the church to begin with? It was Peter, you know? And he had a problem with going into the house of a Gentile, you know, the home of Cornelius, had it not been for the revelation that God had given to him to begin with, right? And then he goes back to the Jewish brethren and he explains himself to what he had done and why and so forth, right? So, you know, he knew.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what does that tell us about folks who are good Christians, even good Christian leaders? Yeah. Yeah. They can mess up too. Or maybe I should say we, you know. We can mess up too, you know. Just because we're elders in the church or ministers or whatever doesn't mean we're not perfect, folks. I know, I shouldn't have told you that. I know you're all disappointed now, right? No, we're not perfect. And there are times when, you know, we sometimes in that room in there, in that office in there, when we meet, we talk about things and say, hey, you know, we need to straighten this out. You see? That's what we do. That's what good leaders do. You see? But you know, we have to recognize that there are sometimes there are battles that need to be fought, and we've got to be willing to die on some hills for the sake of the gospel. We've already read some earlier about Diotrephes. We talked about him and John, and you know, as John wrote about him in third John, there are some battles that needed to be fought. You see, and. And so that needed to happen. You've got to confront it. One of the things that, you know, Jesus himself tells us, what are we supposed to do when we have a brother or sister who sins against us? Okay. Well, specifically, does he not say, if your brother sins against you, go to him and show him his fault. Help me out here with the last part. After you've gone and gossiped about the situation to everybody else in the congregation, right? No, he says, just between the two of you. Okay? If he listens to you, you know, you've won your brother over. Right? But then he recognizes Jesus is laying this out for us. You know, somebody's going to be some problems doing this. Okay? Because what does he say next? If he doesn't listen to you, then you go gossiping about it. No, you take what? Take someone with you so that the matter may be established by one or two witnesses. Okay? And then if he doesn't listen to you then, no, you go, you tell it to the church. Okay? You tell it to the church. And what's the point of all of that? So that you take this brother and get them to recognize what they've done is sinful and that they need to repent of that. See? Now, the problem with that is that we don't like that. See? We don't like that. And that in itself sometimes causes problems. because people get offended when someone comes and says, hey, you did this, and, you know, and then they go and run and tell the church about it. And it causes problems. I know that because I've been through that before. But, nevertheless, that's what Jesus tells us to do. So we need to do it. Right? Not just try to avoid it because we're afraid they'll get upset with us and so forth. Because usually when we try to avoid things like that, we don't do what God tells us to do, it's going to come back to bite us later on. Okay? So we need to do that. But the point is that there are hills that are worth dying on. There are battles that need to be fought. What we need to be praying for is the wisdom to know which hills we need to be willing to die on and which hills we don't. And that kind of wisdom comes only from God. Okay? So, as we're talking about the problem with me is you, that first level, we're looking at the just the whole issue that, you know, we're going to fight some battles, and oftentimes when we enter into those battles, we need to be stopping and considering, first of all, is the problem, the real problem, you, or is it me, perhaps? And realize that oftentimes the reason we charge off into, you know, battle with someone is because we're convinced that there's something wrong with them and we've got to fix them. And that is not always the case. So that leads us then to level two. Okay? You see, the reality is the problem with us is not you. The real problem is the warfare within. That's level two. The warfare that is within. In verses 1 and 2, James clearly defines where that battle, that war, is located. Okay? You see, oftentimes the issue that we get into a squabble about with someone is not the real issue. All right? We've got to recognize that. Somebody read for us verses 1 and 2 here. Okay. So what's the real problem? What's the real warfare? Okay. You see, we tend to think of the problem as this issue or that issue. You know, this person did that, this person said this, you know, whatever the case may be, and we focus on that as the issue. When the reality is, and as we said a moment ago, usually the issue that we have is with the other person. Okay? But James tells us that the real issue is not the other person, but what? It's the desires, your desires, he says, that battle within you. Okay? It's not the other person. It's not what they said or what they did. It's your desires that battle within you, he says here. Okay? The real cause of fights in the church, then, are the fights within its members, not between them. Okay? It's the fights that we have going on inside of us. Okay? When we are conflicted inwardly, we tend to take it out on those outside of us. So in other words, when we got garbage going on inside, we very rarely blame it on ourselves. It's somebody else that did this or did that. or said this or didn't do this or whatever the case may be. We very rarely, I mean, let's be honest, how many times do you look at a situation and go, boy, I really did this, and now I've got a bad heart about all this? Isn't it so much easier for us to look at what the other person did or didn't do and blame them on the whole thing? See? But James clearly identifies the source of the conflict as being those desires that are battling within us. When we are unhappy with ourselves, we go after those around us, and any issue will suffice as a pretense for a fight. Okay? Think about what he's saying here. Okay? I'm unhappy inside, and I'm going to take it out on somebody else. Now, we don't say it that way, do we? But that's what we do. Okay. Most church conflicts aren't even about what those involved in the conflicts think they're about. Okay? They're arguing about this, they're arguing about that. And that's not what the real issue is at all. For instance, how are we doing time-wise here? Okay. All right, we're good. For instance, go over to Romans 7. Beginning in verse 14, let me get somebody to read from verse 14 to verse 25 for us. And we hopefully will begin to be able to see where this true source of conflict that James is talking about within, where does it come from? Paul talks about, in this text, his struggles with sin. Who's got it? Verse 14. Just read beginning in verse 14.
Another law in my members of warfare.
Warring.
Warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members. Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ, our Lord. So then, with the mind, I myself serve the Lord. So then, with the mind, I myself serve the Lord of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin.
Okay. So what's Paul discussing here? What is he writing about? Yeah. And what's happening in this war? Well, he's not knowledgeable, he should be, but also what he knows to do, he says, I don't do that. Instead, I do what I know I'm not supposed to do. Any of y'all ever do that? Yeah. I do it all the time, you see. That's what James is talking about here. We know the good we're supposed to do, Paul says. I know what I'm supposed to do, but I don't do that. Instead, I do what I know I'm not supposed to do. You see? That's the struggle that we have within us. Okay? And we get to warring inside of ourselves, and there's all kinds of things that as a result of that, I mean, you know, there's one, the G word, called guilt, right? You're doing what you know you're not supposed to be doing. You start to feel guilty. You start feeling miserable. What is that all about? God's trying to tell you something. Okay? It's called a conscience. And God's trying to get your attention. But instead, sometimes of getting our attention the way He wants to, we start taking it out on one another. Because we're miserable. We're angry at ourselves, but instead of being angry at ourselves and taking it out on us, we take it out on others. You see? And we quarrel and fight. That's what James is saying here, isn't it? What causes the quarrels and fights amongst you? Isn't it the desires that are within you? You see? And what causes us to do the things that we know we shouldn't be doing? It's the desires that are within us, you see? It's that sin that lives in us. So we get ourselves into trouble, sin-wise, inside, and we take it out on one another. Okay. Let's take a look at another one. Galatians chapter 5, verses 16 and 17. Somebody read that for us, please. Galatians 5, 16 and 17. Okay, that translation says they are contrary to one another. Okay, the true meaning here and the wording that is used is, and it says they are at war with one another. Some of your translations use the word conflict. Okay, they're at war. These two parts of our nature, the sinful nature and the spirit. You see? They're at conflict. They're at war. They're battling inside of us, is what Paul is saying here. And again, same thing. We got those battles going on inside, and James is saying that's what's causing the strife among you, because you're warring inside of yourself, and you're taking it out on one another. Don't they come from the desires that battle within you, he says. Right? But here's a question for you. Are we really guilty of murder? Okay. Look at what he says in verse 2. You want something, but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You kill, he says. You murder. Is James saying here, is he really saying that we are guilty of murder? Okay, all right. And certainly, I think that we are guilty of character assassination sometimes by the things that we say about other people. See? So in that way, we do murder someone's character when we gossip and slander them and things of that nature. I think you're right. And you just said something that's really important, really key to this. He said wanting to go out. Okay? Go over to Matthew chapter 5. Somebody read verses 21 through 26 for us. Matthew 5, 21 through 26. So, you know, Dennis, you said, you know, wanting to murder someone, and the problem with, you know, that Jesus was addressing back then is the folks were looking at the law going, well, I didn't actually do it, so therefore I'm not guilty of it. And Jesus said, not so. You desired to do it, or you wanted to do it in your heart, you're guilty of it. See? And so, you know, I think James can very easily be talking about that whole issue that Jesus, you know, brought up and said, look, you know, if you're getting so angry with one another that you want to kill them, but even though you don't, you're still guilty. You stand in judgment for that. Okay? And certainly there are folks sometimes within the church that have gotten that angry with one another. I've known people that won't even talk to somebody else in the church. They sit on opposite sides of the building so they don't have to encounter one another. They. And, you know, Jesus says, you're going to stand in judgment for that. And so what James is saying here, this stuff that battles within us, okay, and he says, you kill and you covet. Okay. That we're doing that. One more point here. I want to make in this, and then let me take some comments here. Okay, this is that in in Jewish literature, oftentimes oppressing the poor was spoken of as killing them. See, so they would have understood that. Okay, go over, for instance, over in chapter 5 and verse 6, and look at the warning that James is giving to those. This is in James chapter 5. Look at the warning that he's given to the rich folks who are oppressing the poor, and look at what he says here. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. See? Now, again, they may not have been guilty of physically murdering a poor person. His whole point and the topic that he's addressing primarily is that they're oppressing the poor. But here's an example of how that is looked upon in Jewish literature at that time as equivalent to murdering. You're taking away their livelihood, their ability to sustain themselves, you say, then you're doing, you know, you may as well go ahead and take their life, because that's basically what you're doing. Okay? Judy, you had a comment a moment ago? Got to be careful. We talked about a few weeks ago, James was discussing, you know, how we speak, you know, and being careful about that. Exactly right. Okay, we're out of time. I'm sorry. I'm going to petition the wise leadership of the church to give us more time. All right. Okay, level three. We're gonna talk about level three next week. Let me just give you a little hint, and I encourage you to read this next part here that James has to say. Level three is enmity with God. Okay? Enmity with God. What causes strife and quarrels among you? Think about your relationship with God. That's what he's going to challenge us with. So that's where we'll begin next time. Thank you all very much.